Sticks and stones may break his bones, but conservative lies will only make him stronger. Sam Cedar.
What, we're on? It's so casual today. Kyle is right. It's super casual Friday. Not regular casual Friday. Super casual Friday. Sam Cedar, this is the Majority Report. We are tweeting at Majority FM. You can check out our blog at majority.fm. I think we are the first major podcast with the name Majority to use a .fm address. So we'll just put that down as one of the many firsts. It is Friday. We're a little bit late. You know, folks, it's still soft launch time. We don't go to hard launch until next Tuesday, and that's when we're gonna do it like we did in radio. You got to go on. There is no dead air. You can't just throw on some music and hope to play on people's emotions and sentimentality about the songs. I am checking your tweets at Majority FM. Just in case you are wondering, and of course our email. If you want to email us, samcedarshow@gmail.com, we're going to update that as well. We do not have a live Sammy cam as of yet. We are working on that technology. That'll happen soon. We're going to have our first guest today, but it's still soft launch period, so I don't really consider him our first guest. And it's Ciro. Everybody knows Ciro, right? Former board op from Air America. Turns out he actually has a life beyond just being a board op. He is now a prominent film critic and television critic. And he's going to give me two suggestions. I don't get to go to the movies anymore. Not that I used to go all the time, but I there was a time where I used to go to the movies all the time, to the theaters. And then I got a job. And then I also got a wife and a kid, and then just everything seemed to, just like my whole life seemed to go away. Just disappeared. Last night, I came home. I've actually had a pretty good, we were here a little bit late last night, setting up the studio. As you can see, we have video. Maybe we should, maybe what we'll do today is actually see if we can just post this video like on Blip or something like that, just to give people a sense of what's going on, but, just as a one-off. But, so I can point to this. Behind me, we have a sort of makeshift backdrop that really consists of like four things that we printed out. But we were here late last night just sort of setting things up. Dorsey, you even commented on it. I saw this thing.
It's amazing.
Yeah, all right, thank you. So I was walking home last night late, and I walked by, some in New York City, some apartments are in basements. They're sort of like almost sub-first floor. And I see on a big screen TV, like, one first-person shooter game, like a video game. I don't know what it was. I think it might have been, like, the new Call of Duty or something like that, probably. Is that out now?
I don't know if it's out, but I've been seeing commercials on television when I watch television.
I think it just came out.
Yeah, I think it came out on the 4th. Whatever it was, I literally sat there for 5 minutes watching this guy's TV screen. I couldn't even see the guy who was playing it. And it was my wife and my daughter are out of town. So I had nothing to do. I don't even, if I ever have a time where I can go out, I can't go out because I don't know anybody anymore. But I'm sitting there watching, just like, God, I remember back when I could play video games. It was awesome. So it was really sad. And then I just had a series of very happy. I was on Twitter last night quite a bit because I saw the Stuart Maddow interview, which was a fascinating interview. And Stuart really pissed me off. I mean, I'm a fan. We're going to go into it in a second. But I want to announce that I think I was hit on last night on Twitter. by a lady. I'm pretty sure I was hit on. Let's just put it that way. And don't go run and try and search my Twitter. It was a DM, folks, a direct message. So that was nice. That was a nice feeling. That rarely it rarely happens. The camera went to sleep again. Of course, he hasn't figured out how to set the standby thing off on the camera. That's the problem with some of these with setting up the system, is because we forget over the course of the show what we got to work on until it comes up again the next day. So I was hit upon a Twitter, and then coming into on the subway today, a guy comes up to me in the subway, and he says, "You look like a famous film star." And I'm like, "Ugh." First of all, I was just like, "I wonder who he thinks I am." First of all, because usually I get like, "You look like you're on TV." Because somebody thinks that I'm like some other Jewish guy on TV. But I'd never gotten the film star thing. And then he goes, like that guy who was on Air America. And I realized he was just messing with me. And he turns out that's the first fan of the new Majority Report that has come up to me on the street. Guy's name is Steve. Big fan of the show.
That's so old school. You didn't even do it on Twitter.
No, he actually, right. Well, he didn't know I was, hopefully he didn't know I was on the train. I mean, I hope it's not a situation where someone's actually stalking me. Like, they saw me staring into someone else's apartment, longingly looking at a video game, wanting my life back. And then they decided to stalk me. And then just, they gave up the ghost on the train for whatever reason. It is Casual Friday. Did we ever have a sound for Casual Friday? I don't think so. No, I don't think that was it. The beauty is the one good thing about John Bonaire becoming our he's going to be the squeaker of the house, right? He's going. I get to use this. I'm going to have an opportunity to use this sound again many, many times. There he is. I wonder if he's actually going to use like a golf club instead of the gavel. That would actually be a nice touch. Let's talk about this Jon Stewart interview last night. Now, I'm of a couple of different minds about this, because I just noticed that over the past week I've been talking a lot about Lawrence O'Donnell for whatever reason, and Jon Stewart. And I think to a certain extent, there's a little bit of retrenchment here. Obviously, we, not all, but I presume most people listening to this show have been fairly disappointed with the Democrats and Obama over the past couple of years. And which is not to say that there haven't been major accomplishments. There have. But I don't believe that there's been the same measure. I mean, there's been policy accomplishments. There's been also some policy disappointments, significant ones. But there's clearly been a massive failure of political accomplishments. And I believe a failure in capitalizing on the crisis / opportunity. That's what that Chinese, isn't there a Chinese proverb, or there's a Chinese character. Like the Chinese character for crisis has like half of its opportunity. And the fact of the matter is when the Bush administration drove this country, basically embedded it deep into the earth, as it were, by destroying our regulatory processes, shattering our economy, killing hundreds of thousands of people with our tax dollars. And that's not an exaggeration. I'm not exaggerating when I say that. Those are the Defense Department numbers. And in addition to also, you know, destroying thousands of lives of our U.S. service military personnel, et cetera, et cetera. And I think, you know, people saw there was a big opportunity that was basically left on the shelf, and that shelf life expired. An opportunity to move progressiveness forward, you know, to swing the pendulum back. But the pendulum didn't swing back. And it wasn't because the American public is not in favor of such things as Social Security or such things as cheaper health care or a single-payer health care system or clean water or civil liberties or no fraud in financial services. It's not that the American public's not for those things. It's just that our system of government, in some ways, has been captured by the money that promotes the opposite of those things. And so here we are, you know, with Social Security threatened. Here we are on the eve of the Obama administration capitulating in extending the tax cuts to the wealthy. And, you know, the question is, where do we start to rebuild this process? Where do we start to regain some type of power if electing a Democratic president and Democratic majorities in the House and the Senate doesn't do it? You know, obviously what we constructed, what we built by going out and electing it was not enough. Foundationally, we need a foundation that may be a little bit stronger. And so when supposed leading lights of liberalism, you know, are espousing views that are inconsistent, I think. Well, it's not a question of, I'm not looking for some type of ideological purity, but it's just simply, you know, rightly or wrongly, certain people are deemed to speak for progressive, liberal, leftist values. And I think it's important for all of us on the left to really analyze what they're saying. And that's why I was, you know, that's why I was talking about Lawrence O'Donnell. Because in some respects, it's more important what liberals are saying at this point, or perceived liberals, than what Glenn Beck is saying. And, you know, that's what, you know, John Stewart, listen, I'm a big fan of John Stewart's. I'm a fan of his comedy. But back in the day, when Janine and I had our show together, we would talk a lot about our disappointment with John Stewart from a political sense. But the argument, the conversations would also include the idea that it's not his responsibility. He's a comedian. He doesn't have a responsibility to carry any type of activist message, despite the fact that he finds himself in a position where he could have some influence. It's not his responsibility. Now, you could get into an argument where John Stewart saying that, you know, he's not in the game is akin to Charles Barkley saying, I'm not a role model. It's not my fault people think I'm a role model. Well, you know, that comes with the job. But be that as it may, it was a fascinating interview with Rachel Maddow last night. He called Maddow to have the interview. He called Maddow. This is relevant. Because he feels he was misunderstood with his rally. And he feels that, you know, and I think he got criticism from Maddow. I pointed that out, that I thought Maddow, her criticism when talking about Olbermann was geared towards Stewart. Stewart obviously felt that. Maddow claims it wasn't necessarily, but, you know, whatever. Bill Maher's criticism of Stewart was clearly aimed at Stewart. And so Stewart wants to go out there and set the record straight. He can't do it on his show, because that's not the format of his show. And he doesn't want to tarnish that. Fine. God bless. But when you go this system's not going to work, Dorsey.
I know.
It's just distracting. When Jon Stewart goes out into the world to speak, whether it's at his rally or whether it's on Rachel Maddow's show, you know, if you hit the record just every intermittently, it'll stay on because it'll show some activity. Sorry, folks, it's soft launch. Hard launch, I would never interrupt a monologue in that way. Soft launch, I'll do it. So, like, when Jon Stewart goes into that arena, it is legitimate to criticize him, not based upon what he does on his show, not based as a comedian, because I got news for you. To quote Sarah Silverman, if you have to go out and explain the joke, it's not funny. And so I'm not criticizing Jon Stewart as a comedian. He's not inoculated from this criticism because he's a comedian, because he wasn't going on Rachel Maddow's show as a comedian. He himself said in this interview that when he did the rally, it wasn't about necessarily about him being a comedian. He felt that he had earned the right to say his mind after 10, 12 years. Yes, he has the right to do it. And everyone else who hears it has the right to critique it. And I'm only saying this in this sort of defensive way because, you know, I got people on Twitter just hammering me. One woman actually said, one woman, I don't even know what it was, defended herself by saying, I never said that Jon Stewart never said that George Bush wasn't a war criminal. I don't even know what you're talking about. But it came from a tweet that I put out last night about one comment that Jon Stewart made in the interview with Maddow as they're talking about the equivalency issue. Not the media equivalency, Fox and MSNBC being equivalent, but the charges of Obama being a, like Hitler, and Bush being a war criminal. Now, I want you to listen. Now, remember here, I'm not critiquing Jon Stewart as a comedian. He's not a comedian at this moment. He is a guy who's going on and talking about ideas that he has that are not comedic. So just play this clip.
Okay, yeah. You've said Bush is a war criminal. Now, that may be technically true. In my world, war criminal is Pol Pot or the Nuremberg trials.
Or Harry Truman,
saying
but then you took that back.
Yeah. And I did for good reason, because I don't think he was. And I think that, you know, again, we have to define our terms. But I think that's such an incendiary charge that when you put it into conversation as, well, technically he is, that may be right, but it feels like a conversation stopper, not a conversation starter.
Okay, now, let's listen to what Stewart's saying here, all right? He doesn't perceive, while he may concede, he doesn't really explicitly say one way or another whether or not he thinks that Bush is technically a war criminal.
He sort of says that,
and so let's stipulate that he did say that. But he doesn't see him, he's maybe technically a war criminal, but I don't see him as a war criminal like Pol Pot or Nuremberg trials. Okay, fair enough. But, you know, like, is there really a sliding scale of war criminal? Yeah, I guess so. I guess there is a fundamental difference between someone who kills, you know, one person. Let's say, you know, one person who rapes during war. I raped one person. I killed 50,000 people. Okay, maybe, you know, I don't know. I'm trying to give him the benefit of the doubt of this, because that's what this is all about his theory here, is that we got to give people the benefit. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt of that. There is a sliding scale of war criminality. By Defense Department documents, by their word, we killed over 100,000 innocent civilians in Iraq. It was an illegal invasion of that country based on lies told to the American public. Did George Bush believe there were weapons of mass destruction in there? Maybe. Let me stipulate, yes, he believed it. But he went up there and he said, we know because of evidence we have that they're there. Now, that was a lie because they weren't there. And the evidence was shoddy, and the evidence was debunked before they dropped that first bomb. There were hundreds of weapons inspectors in Iraq at the time that had been there for 3 or 4 months looking for weapons of mass destruction and found zero. Yet George Bush and the people he sent out to lie to the American public said, we know they're there. But they didn't know they were there. But they had to speak with that level of assuredness because they thought they were there, they wanted to attack, and they, in the words of Paul Wolfowitz, the Assistant Secretary of Defense, it was a reason we could all agree upon. That's not to mention the torture that he authorized. So, from John Stewart's perspective, George Bush may not be a war criminal like Pol Pot, but I suspect that perspective would be slightly different if John Stewart lived in Iraq and his kids had died because of they were shot at a U.S. checkpoint, they were blown up by a U.S. bomb, whatever it was. I suspect his perspective would be slightly different. And I guarantee you that if Pol Pot was in charge, was the head of a country that produced all the media in the world, and had the opportunity to write the history books, John Stewart wouldn't perceive Pol Pot as a war criminal. I suspect that had the Nazis succeeded, there would have been no Nuremberg trials, and we wouldn't have perceived them as a war criminal. Just because you win does not mean you're not a war criminal. And John Stewart and I both paid for the deaths of those 100,000 Iraqi civilians with our tax dollars. He bought a couple more because he pays more taxes. But the idea that that's a conversation stopper, I'm sorry. It's awkward when your president is a war criminal. It's awkward when you know that when you wrote that check to the IRS, you're paying for the murder, at the very least, the killing of innocent civilians, premised on a lie. That's awkward. It's uncomfortable. And the idea of raising it, the idea that we shouldn't raise it because it ends the conversation with whom? This is what we're talking about when people say the banality of evil. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm sorry if it's a conversation stopper, but let's just end it right here. I mean, I found that offensive. You know, and again, you know, he doesn't want to, he puts himself in that position where he can be criticized for that. And I'm not, you know, this is not a question of saying like, well, it's rude for Code Pink to announce it. It is rude. It is rude. But when someone who has 22 minutes a day on television and interviews people like Wolfowitz, like Richard Perle, like some of the top officials in the Bush administration, when he has the ability to get 200,000 people at a rally, and he's not Tosh 2.0, and he's not Carrot Top, and it just so happens that his show is about politics, and you're going to call Rachel Maddow and say, I want an interview to explain myself, and you say it's rude, it's a conversation stopper, it's not bringing people together to point out the fact that George Bush is a war criminal, well, I'm sorry. You're living in a bubble, dude. You're living in a bubble. You know, it really, some of the points he made, and there's some great points he made on this thing, and I'm a fan of Jon Stewart. But some of this sounds like arguments he's having with his writers, because, you know, the bottom line is that Jon Stewart can't go out and talk to people in the way that we can. Once you hit a certain threshold of fame, it just becomes impossible. I've seen it. I have a lot of friends who became famous enough that they really can't, that their lives are irrevocably altered in some fashion. And so he's having arguments, I think, with his writers, some writers. And he's taking a position and defending it. And that position is that certain areas, if you go past, even if they're true, technically speaking, you just don't say. And I think that's incredibly dangerous. I think that's incredibly dangerous. Because if you don't point out those things that you think are true, and you actually, in some ways, deride people for being so explicit about it, you are all that it takes for evil is for good men to do nothing? Is that, is that not the Robert Kennedy quote? All it takes for evil is for good men to do nothing. And Jon Stewart is certainly a good man, and he's certainly perceived to be left-leaning, and he certainly, his brand is sanity, right? Rationality. Are you too rational to really call out someone for being a war criminal if they're only technically a war criminal? War criminal is a pretty technical term. And then we have this whole weapons of mass destruction manipulation thing. I mean, you know, this is the thing, is that I get John, his point here. His point is that we need to approach this rationally. The problem is that anybody who brought this up in a rational manner is also dismissed. You know, there'd be no Code Pink. Or maybe there still would be, but they'd be talking about something else. If people who accepted that George Bush is a technical war criminal would actually do something about it. Play clip number two.
Now he's back in his book to saying Saddam was pursuing weapons of mass destruction. That's right. He says he declares that as if it is fact.
And it's okay, this is, let me just set this up. Here's Rachel's talking about how George Bush has sort of flip-flopped a little bit about whether or not they're weapons of mass destruction. I don't care about the flip-flop here. We're talking about Jon Stewart's reaction to this. And listen, I understand, this is not a question of I'm slicing and dicing all of his words. He wanted to have this interview. And it's very important for all of us to understand from where he's coming from. At least it's important enough for him, who was sick, to get out of bed to go and have this interview in a timely fashion so that we could all have this perspective. Okay, let's play again.
Just not true. And it's not even
it's true depending on where you start the pursuit. In other words, is my son pursuing his car? Yes, my son very much wants a car. Now he's six. So he doesn't have a job yet. But he is pursuing a car. He's got to wait a while.
Yeah.
And a lot of things are going to have to happen. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, I get that that's a manipulation,
yeah.
But it is also, in some ways, a subtle narrative manipulation to just dismiss that.
So what he's saying is there is that there was maybe some truth to there being weapons of mass destruction, because Hussein may have had some desire, like his six-year-old to get a car, to have weapons of mass destruction. Now, there was a lot of things that have to happen in between, but he's suggesting that there is some truth there that Hussein had intentions to get weapons of mass destruction. Let me stipulate, okay. But let me also, let me argue that if George Bush had got up and said, Saddam Hussein, his intentions to get weapons of mass destruction that are equivalent to, let's say, not a 6-year-old, but like a 12-year-old who wants to get a Camaro. Would that have been enough to get us to go to war? Here's the point. Saddam Hussein may have had intentions to go at weapons of mass destruction. He certainly did back when we gave them to him. When Don Rumsfeld went over there as the head of a pharmaceutical company selling him biological or chemical weapons. There's no doubt, but that's not the issue. The issue is, does it rise to the point that we need to intervene militarily to kill Saddam Hussein and take out 100,000 Iraqi civilians? Let me suggest to John Stewart that if we are worried about a 6-year-old who wants a car, there's a lot of things we can do other than going in and, you know, gauzing up his hands so he can't use the keys. That's the point. Stewart, and I think because maybe it's just his nature or whatever, thinks that we should really try to understand where George Bush was coming from. Look, this is not about my neighbor, you know, is having an issue and had a bad day. This is about the most powerful person in the world, essentially, using that power that resulted in the deaths of tens of thousands of people. It may be hard to accept, but that's just the reality of it. That's more real than anything else you're talking about. That's the only real reality in this entire conversation. We can parse whether or not George Bush really believed it. It doesn't matter. If anything, to say that George Bush really believed this, it makes it more incumbent upon people like John Stewart to, if not dissent, to certainly not deride that dissent. And this is based on his own belief system. I understand why Sean Hannity derided dissent. Because Sean Hannity also believes that Jesus said, you don't turn the other cheek, you pick up the sword and you fight. Literally. And I know he believes that because I know he said that to someone. Here's more on Bush's stance on torture, where Stewart is sort of deriding the demonization of Bush over torture.
If the place that you start from is he's an evil man who did that to lie to us so that he could take gratuitous pleasure in his own masculinity, like, or whatever it is, like that does.
No, but that's, I mean, nobody's, right. I'm not saying that, nobody's.
Right,
saying.
And that was, but that's an example of, again, pushing it too far, but people, that's what people do. They take things and they go into the next realm.
Now, you see, I'm sorry. I mean, I know this sounds nitpicky, but he's saying that the reason why people attack George Bush, they start with he's an evil man and he wants to torture because he's sadistic. I'm sure there's people who have said that. But there's a lot more people who have said this is fundamentally wrong for our country. That this is against, in addition to endangering our own military personnel, this is something we used to prosecute Japanese war criminals for. Technical war criminals. Right? This is not a question. I mean, George Bush may be a sadistic nut job. And people may say that, but that's not the argument. That's the way to get people to listen to the argument when everyone else says, look, I mean, is John Stewart implying here that if nobody had called George Bush evil and said that he did this for sadistic reasons, we'd have a lot more action happening with torture? Or is it just like, it would be much more comfortable not to have people say that about George Bush? I mean, really, what are the implications that people said that? It drives people apart? Well, how about this driving people apart? The fact that we tortured people, it's against federal law, it's against international law, and there's no accounting for it. Yeah, but there are people who are saying that George Bush was, you know, an evil man for doing it. Who gives a shit? Who gives a shit? I don't care if people are saying that George Bush was Santa Claus, and he did. How does that in any way change the fact that we sanction torture? I mean, look, I understand. Later in the interview, Stewart says that he relates more to Jerry Seinfeld than he does to Rachel. I totally get that. I totally get that. Dispositionally, I still sort of perceive myself as a comedian. Fortunately, it's very easy for me to make this transition because people didn't think I was that funny. I mean, I understand. I understand from a comedic standpoint the idea of being too passionate about any one thing, it creates a certain vulnerability. Because it's really easy to mock people who are extremely passionate. I mean, I do that. I do it mostly for people on the right. I mean, I think, you know, Jon Stewart had some very good points in this. And his indictment of, you know, sort of this back and forth type of thing, I think I'm certainly at least guilty of a certain portion of that. But I say guilty only of his indictment. Because, yes, I will tell you right now, I am explicitly perceive my job, at least part of it, I should say, is to mock the right wing of this country, to mock the conservative ideology. I also like to take it apart on a logic, in terms of logic and in terms of an argument level, but I do, and do I hold the left up to the same standard in terms of criticism? Not exactly, no. Not exactly. But that's because part of what I see my job is to push back. And I have a limited amount of resources, a limited amount of time. And that's the way I'm going to make my impact. You know, and the idea that somehow, because MSNBC has turned to the left in the past 5 years, that's changed everything. That's ruined everything. No, the difference is that Jon Stewart was not listening to Rush Limbaugh on a daily basis in 1992. Jon Stewart was not aware that there was an entire industry doing what Fox does, but just they weren't on television. They were doing it through direct mail. They were doing it through talk radio. And the idea that MSNBC, which has a viewership of 500,000, maybe a million people, is somehow the problem is absurd. It's absurd. It looks like the problem to him because he watches so much of that stuff. But what he doesn't see is that it is, and including himself, even though he doesn't want to be there, he's there. That these memes resonate. They become less focused, like ripples. And they ripple out from this cable television world. And what Stewart either doesn't comprehend or fails to comprehend or doesn't want to accept, which I can appreciate, is that it's not how many people who are listening to him or how many minutes a day he's on the air. It's who is listening to him. He is shaping. He is working the refs, to use an Eric Alterman term. He is affecting the perspective that these people who project outward the news, he is affecting their perspective and their mindset. And that doesn't have implications just for the people who watch Chris Matthews or Sean Hannity. That has implications for people three times removed from seeing that broadcast. Because that's the way that ideas simply happen in the world. You know, not everybody has to read Marx to be affected by what he says. Not everybody has to read Jefferson to be affected by what he says. That's the way it works. And is there anybody in media who's followed more closely than Jon Stewart? Yes, probably. Half a dozen people. That's not a lot of people. You know, is Rachel Maddow ecstatic? I mean, how many other... I mean, how long was that interview? It was practically her whole show, right? It was her whole show. How many other interviews has she done on her whole show? Colin Powell? Maybe there's one or two others. Obama? So, you know, sorry. John's, you know, and let's take this four, and then we'll go to Rosen, and I got some other stories. I'm going longer on this than I want.
You're in the game.
Okay, stop.
We're in the same game.
Here's, you know, Rachel's trying to get at what's the difference between you and me. And I do think there's a difference between Rachel and John, but I don't know if I accept this premise that they're in different games.
You're in the game. Like, here's
what
people...
You're in the game, too. We're in the same game.
I don't think so. I think you're in a better game than I'm in.
How? What's the difference? What's the material difference?
You're on the playing field.
Oh, we lost it. What happened?
I don't know.
Can you try and do it again?
Try and do it again.
You're in the game. Like, here's what people...
You're in the game, too. We're in the same game.
I don't think so. I think you're in a better game than I'm in.
How? What's the difference? What's the material difference?
You're on the playing field.
Oh, all right. Well, he's saying that you're on the playing field and I'm in the stands, you know, rooting. You know, Roger Ebert is not a filmmaker. He is a critic. We're in a different game. And he said, look, you know, and this is what I've chosen. I want to stay out of it, et cetera, et cetera. Can you play that clip again? You can't find it.
No,
okay.
Sorry.
And actually, this is the part of, I think there's some truth to that, but at the end of the day, I also think there's not. You know, I've said it before. Jon Stewart would not be doing an hour-long interview on Rachel Maddow's show if he was Tosh 2.0. And you don't even have to go that extreme. He wouldn't be doing it if he was Dimitri Martin. He wouldn't be doing it if he was Nick Swardson. He wouldn't even be doing it if he was Dave Chappelle. Whose show was significantly more funny. Now, Chappelle warrants that type of time on the Majority Report. But that's a different story. What he does may be a little bit different, although he's not doing it now, not when he goes on to express this, but the implications of what he's doing is no less. I'm sorry, you know, like... Roger Ebert is not a filmmaker. He's just a film critiquer. But it's not, that analogy is not quite the same because Rachel and John use the same medium. And Roger Ebert does not use a film camera. Now, I suppose you could argue, well, when he had a show on TV, he would talk into it. But even then, they are both affecting their perception of events that take place that affect people's lives. And it's not like they're doing it from like Jon Stewart does a show about like, hey, airline food. No, he does it with the same cast of characters. I understand his agenda is different, that he wants to focus on media critique. But I think the bottom line is, to a certain extent, he's over his head. And I respect that. And he doesn't want to deal with it. And the best part of that interview was towards the end where he's like, this is what I want to do. I purposely stay out of it. I don't want to get up there and jump into the game and say my piece. I sort of did that during the rally, and I did it because I felt I earned it. And presumably that's why he's also on Maddow talking about it. Fine, I respect that. Stay on your show. Stay on your show. Do what you do. Stay on your show. And don't go out of that realm. Because when you do, you're subject to this type of critique. I do think there was a couple points that, like, you know, he said, like, the teabags thing, that was overblown. And Rachel actually, I think, is guilty of not so much overblowing the teabag thing. Because he said, you know, it was something we would do for a day. Rachel did do it for longer than a day. And here's the real problem, and this is the problem that Stewart didn't say to Rachel, and I would agree with this. Not funny. It was not funny. It was funny for a day. But it just was not that good of a joke to really draw it out like that. But that's a comedic critique. And I do think that there is a lot of valid criticism of people like Rachel or Keith or on the right of their comedy. You know, Rush Limbaugh's comedy. But that's not what we're talking. We're not talking about good or bad comedy. That's for Mark Maron's podcast. You know, that's irrelevant. So I just think that, you know, I'm a fan of Stewart's. I think Colbert's stuff is a little bit more satirical, but by its very nature. And I think John is, you know, he's not responsible for being the savior of the world. But you can't do a TV show and not get criticized for it. Let's bring on our TV critic. This guy was incredibly mean to the executive producers of Lost. Boy, was he mean sometimes to them. And it's one thing to criticize the TV show, but then if you go on for these interviews or have a rally, you're going to be critiqued on a more political ground. Bottom line. Oh, that sound leads me to believe that we are getting a...
Hello.
Let's see. I'm going to call Chris Rosen.
Eventually we'll get to the point where you won't have to hear the ring, folks. You should have called him on the cell phone beforehand just to test that. Hi, is Chris there?
Yeah, this is Chris.
Chris, hey, it's Sam Suter from the Majority Report.
How are you?
I'm good. This is going to be a prank phone call. CeeLo, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah?
I mean, is this a soft launch this week still, or what?
What's that?
Because this is soft launch this week.
Yes, it's soft launch. We are soft launch.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good. You're on the air. I mean, so to speak.
I know, I figured. Yeah, no, I know. That's why I said soft launch.
You can go to Majority, hashtag Majority FM. You can see what people are saying about you.
Oh, nice. I actually Twittered that I was going to be on with the hashtag. I was very excited.
Oh, well, that must be why we're getting so slammed.
So how's it going there?
It's going good. I was just talking about, did you see Jon Stewart's interview with Rachel Maddow?
I'm sorry, what was that?
Did you see Jon Stewart's interview with Rachel Maddow?
I saw some of it. I didn't watch the whole thing yet.
What did you think? Hello?
Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yeah, I can hear you now. What did you think? Are you on a cell phone?
This is all I got.
Do you have a Skype handle? Don't say it on air.
I have a Google phone.
You know what the problem is? We don't have a freaking Intel pro. Oh, I bet you could call his phone number, his Google number.
That'd be tricky.
What's the number?
No, it wouldn't.
Yeah?
Because it's just going to go to your cell phone. That's not going to work. You don't have a Skype account, huh? This is why we have a soft launch, dude. This is why it's soft.
What's up?
This is why it's soft launch.
Well, that's what I figured. Yeah, well, let me see what I got here.
Hey, do you have a way of patching into my computer, and I can call him on Google phone?
Yeah, we can do that.
All right, so bring the thing over here. We'll keep talking, Chris, for a second.
Actually, let's see. I did have Skype. I don't know if I have an account, though.
Great. Just on the IM, when you IM me, you can't do it? The cable's running through the camera? Son of a bitch! We're short a couple of cables here. All right, so let's just try and do this, okay? It's soft launch day.
It's a soft launch, yeah. No, we don't take it seriously, right? Oh, wait.
Well, I mean, we're driving away potential subscribers and jeopardizing my ability to pay for my daughter's braces and health care. But it's not a big deal. I mean, I don't want to put any pressure on you for not having a good cell phone. I can barely hear you. This is just like back in the Air America days. I can't tell you how much downtime we had, and a lot of it could be attributed to Chris Rosen's inability to work the board properly. Probably Air America would still be in business if maybe you knew what you were doing, Chris.
Since we left Air America, Sam, I've been doing movieline.com. That's what I write for now.
You write for movieline.com. Yes, I knew that.
And it's a lot of fun. I have to do some freelance stuff for other places.
I didn't really ask you about what you've been doing, buddy. You just couldn't hear me because of your cell phone.
Hang on, let me see here. I actually am having a hard time hearing you.
Ah, really?
Yes.
Really? Okay, well, look, let's just do this. Give me we're going to have to do it quick, all right, so that we can hear you. Give me your top two choices. We're bringing Chris Rosen on to tell me what I can watch on Netflix streaming or on demand because I can't go to a theater. What are the two films I should be watching this week, Chris?
Well, Sam, you can watch Freakonomics on demand, and I'm sure you've heard of that, right? It's based on the book by the New York Times writers.
Yeah, now those guys are full of shit. You realize that, right?
Yes, well, and they come off like smug jerks in the movie, which is hilarious. But I think why you can watch it, because it's some of the better documentarians working right now all have little segments in it.
Huh.
So if you bought it on demand, I know you have kids, and it's tough to, find time, you can actually put that on for like 15 or 20 minutes of time, because it's all segmented out.
Ah, interesting. Okay, so Freakonomics. And so, all right, I'm going to watch it, and I'll give you an update on what happens after that.
Now, I'd say right now, you can watch, look for Morgan Spurlock. There's the first one. It's all about the origin of baby names and how baby names are, related to race can affect how people go through life. There's a difference between, African-American baby names and, white people baby names.
Interesting. All right, I'll check
that. It's actually pretty interesting. It's really good. And there's some other ones, Seth Gordon does some, and it's pretty good.
Seth Gordon's that big internet.
I think you'll enjoy it. And you can fast forward through the parts that you don't like.
Seth Gordon is that big internet guru, right?
What's that?
Is it Seth Gordon is that internet marketing guru?
I don't know. He's the one who did, I get him confused with the other guy, but he did, I believe he became a Kong.
Huh. All right, maybe he's in. All right. Well, whatever. I'll watch it. I'm sold. You sold me.
Yeah, what's the... And the other one you can watch...
This is Netflix streaming, right?
On Netflix Instant Watch, right, is called The Infidel. Now, I'm sure you've never heard of it, so you have more power to you. It premiered at Tribeca, and it was a festival goer, which means no one is ever going to see it. And then now, thanks to Netflix, you can see it online, which is fun.
What's it about?
And it's about a guy in London who's a Muslim, and he thinks he's a Muslim his whole life, and then he goes to see his dying father and realizes that he was actually Jewish the whole time. And it's like, it's basically just one long, Muslim-Jew joke. And he with the help of...
Did you just ruin the movie for me? Wait a second, did you just ruin the movie for me?
No, it didn't. That happens in the first 3 seconds.
Oh, okay. I was going to say.
It's the whole movie is a joke of him trying to, come to terms with the fact that he's been Muslim and hated Jews his whole life.
Is this a comedy?
And Richard Schiff is in it, who you remember from Wrestling. Toby.
I love him.
Yeah, I remember.
And he is, he plays his, Jew guide in the movie, let's say.
Is this a comedy?
It's a comedy. It's actually a very broad comedy. It's it's almost like an Adam Sandler movie with the comedy, but parts of it are really funny. The problem is it's very long, which is another reason why if it's on InstaWatch, you know, you could pause, do go about other business, and then come back. It feels very long. It's probably like 2 hours. It should really be like 85 minutes.
Dude, I gotta tell you, that movie sounds horrible.
No, I'm telling you, it's actually not terrible. I think you're
coming around and recommending movies that are not terrible.
It's not terrible. Look, you look at InstaWatch. There's not enough.
Well, the whole point of bringing out an expert in films is so that my life won't suck when I try to watch movies because I can't go out. You tell me like the best I can do is like not terrible.
Hey, look, you know,
how am I going to sell this to my wife? How am I going to sell this to my wife? Ah, Chris recommended a movie. Is it good? No, but it's not terrible.
It's not terrible. That's a very, you know, put that right in the poster.
That should
it's
be the name
terrible.
Of the segment. It's not terrible with Chris.
No, but I'll tell you why it's funny. The lead guy is very funny. He's like a James Gandolfini type. And
I don't think
he's
you should keep talking about
and
the movie.
And
the more you
really
talk
good.
About the movie, the less I want to watch it.
You don't want to watch it. I'm still like, the very end, it gets ridiculous. It kind of gets really stupid. There's this whole other subplot about, like, a Muslim cleric who's, like, extremist, and then he comes... I won't spoil it for you. It gets a little ridiculous at the end, but it's not... It was definitely enjoyable. I enjoyed it when I watched it. It's not terrible. That would be my review.
Jesus. Hey, what'd you get away with this in a movie line?
And look, you got what you paid for. Netflix on demand, it's free pretty much. So you paid me a Netflix account.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, I pay for my Netflix account.
But, I mean, that's not a bad deal. You know, you're going to have to pay, like, yeah, I mean, there's Freakonomics I could say I could definitely recommend. That is good.
All right, well.
You're paying for that, like $6. You know, the other one is
just
it's free.
Do me a favor.
And then
next
you can
week.
Be like a cool
be a
little
rich,
because
you can say,
oh,
you can only find one not terrible movie on
that. I got to see it, and you
didn't even hear me. All right. Well, all right, there it is. So, Freakonomics, good. Infidel, not terrible.
Infidel,
you have so much time this weekend. So much time that you're willing to spend 2 hours on something that's not terrible. Or, you know,
I mean, I can give you another on-demand one if you want. You want to do a couple on-demand?
No, one on-demand. That's the way. We got to stick to the segment rules. All right, Chris. Well, this has been.
If you invite me back next week and we can get the segment worked out, I'll have another one for you.
Okay. Well, yes, that's the whole point. Next week you're going to give me another good movie to watch on-demand and another not terrible movie on.
Another not terrible. That could be the name of the segment. Good and not terrible.
Right, yes. I think Dorsey just said that. We have to produce some kind of little
intro for that.
Right. All right. We'll get on it.
All right,
well, I appreciate this, buddy.
We'll get that next week.
Okay.
All right, bye.
Thanks. All right. So let's put down the list. We've got to turn off the beep on the camera. We already have that. We got to figure out how to make it not standby. Got to get a larger mic stem so that I don't have to have the boom pole. We need to get an Intel computer so that we can run our broadcast and do Google at the same time.
Video games in the office.
Yeah, I think yeah, I like that one.
That can't happen. I'll fall into an abyss. But although we could store it here for the weekend. You guys can do that at home, can't you?
What?
No?
Video games?
The size of a closet.
Oh, you're not allowed. What do you mean? You're not allowed to have it at home?
Oh no! I just don't think there's any room.
Yeah,
there's no room for a video game console.
Yeah, that would be the straw. That would
really
bring
wow.
Back.
Jesus. Yeah. All right. So that was Chris Rosen. That was fun. I thought that was a good segment. I may not appreciate it so much after I watch Infidel. Wow, we spent the whole thing on Jon Stewart. Well, there's a couple stories I'm watching. One is this from CNBC. John Carney writes about MERS. And, you know, we need more time to get into this. But basically, there has been a private company that has a computer system from which all of the title record keeping of properties was sort of farmed out to. By mortgage companies without really any authority to do so. This is supposed to be a state-administered operation.
You follow me, Dorsey? Does it make sense?
Not at all.
Okay. When you buy a house, your deed and title is set up by, is registered by the state. And when you get a loan for it, because it's on essentially on your title is held by the state. When you get a loan for it and use it as a as your house is collateral, state's supposed to keep record of who owns the home loan. But during this whole go-go aughts, I guess it was, title of home loans transferred so much as it was securitized and whatnot, this system basically was set up, staffed by 40 people, which basically were traffic cops recording the mortgages. And it saved the banks, you know, millions upon, I guess, billions of dollars in recording fees that they would have had to pay the states. But the thing is, apparently the system is completely effed up, and it was sort of unauthorized, but nobody ever questioned it. And now there are all sorts of lawsuits against these this company, MERS. It's not really a company, or I guess it's a company, called Mortgage Electronic Registry Systems, in which they would owe, and this company is owned by a conglomeration of banks, and they would owe millions and dollars of fines, hundreds of millions of dollars in fines. And it also puts into question a lot of foreclosures because of the fraudulent nature of this system. I mean, it's hard for me to go through this quickly. But the bottom line is Congress is apparently about to pass a bill to sort of retroactively make MERS legal. Which gets on to our theme of earlier of like, well, we got a real problem. And yes, I agree. It's not just a Democrat or Republican problem. It's both parties. But it is an ideological problem. I was going to go into the Obama capitulation on these tax cuts and just to give you some perspective on it. I mean, it's really just reprehensible. Obama has already capitulated essentially on extending the tax cuts for people who make over $250,000. And know that from a policy standpoint, this is absolute garbage. Not just from a political standpoint, but from a policy standpoint. People who save money on taxes, who have that type of wealth, they don't create jobs with it. They generally just invest it into non-productive investments, speculative investments. And just to give you a sense of how much money on a per-person basis we are talking about here, we're talking about $700 billion in terms of deficit shrinking or in terms of providing governmental services or whatever it is. But on an individual basis, I have here the 2000 and 2009 tax brackets. 2000 was Clinton era. 2009, Bush era tax. If you made in 2000, if you made $0 to $43,000, your tax was 15%. If you made $43,000 to $105,000, 28%. $105,000 to $161,000, 31%. $161,000 to $288,000, 36%. Over 290, essentially, 39.6% tax. That's married, filing jointly. As an individual, I guess it's probably more accurate to do an individual. So it would be 0 to 26,000, 15%. We need a graphic for this to put this up. But essentially, the highest tax rate was 39% if you made over $290,000. In 2009... The tax never gets up to 39.6%. The highest tax rate is 35% for people making over $370,000. If you make between $171,000 and $372,000, it's 33%, et cetera, et cetera. The bottom line is, the difference is, if you make $250,000, the bottom line to you in any given year in tax savings, and that's assuming that the $250,000 is all taxable that you make, right? As opposed to, like, I put $30,000 in my pension account, my IRA, Roth, or whatever the frick that is. I don't know. I don't have enough money to put any money in there. I don't worry about it anymore. It's one way to not worry about your pension, not have enough cash to put it in there. I gave some as a gift, blah, 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 whatever it is. But assuming all of your $250,000, or you have $250,000 of taxable income, which would mean that you probably make more than that, you are going to save $7,500. $7,500. Now, most of those people, I think polls have shown, don't mind paying that extra in taxes if it's needed, and they feel it's needed. If you make over $500,000 in taxable income, if you have $500,000 worth of taxable income, it's a difference of $23,000. That's not going to fundamentally change your life. And you're not going to take that money. You're not going to buy something that you otherwise wouldn't have bought. Statistics show that what you do is you invest that money.
It's like a base level Honda Accord.
Right. But the point is it would be great if everybody bought a base-level Honda Accord or the equivalent from GM. But the point is when you get that added $23,000 on top of the $500,000 taxable income you have, you're not more apt to spend it. You're just not. And you're certainly not going to start a company for $23,000 and hire somebody. Well, I can get the... You had 3 employees, $7,000 a year. Actually, although I mean, I would do that, but if I was making fun, that's not. You guys are like, what? Do we got a raise? Obama and the Democrats are going to cave on this, and it's disgusting. It's disgusting. And the idea that they would do that at the same time when this plan to cut Social Security benefits is out there. And understand, Atrios had it right. When we talk about Social Security reform, we're talking about one thing. One thing and one thing only. That is rich people stealing from people who have paid into Social Security. Period. Period. There nothing else need be said about that. That is a complete upward distribution of the wealth. A complete looting of that money and those extra taxes that were put in there in 1983 when Alan Greenspan and Ronald Reagan said, we're going to have a demographic bump in 30 years, and the way that we will pay for it is by raising taxes on wages, period. And instead of putting it in a lockbox, because we all made fun of Al Gore when he said lockbox, because it was funny. And incidentally, that was 4 or 5 years before Keith Olbermann ever said anything liberal on television. But even still, somehow. And instead of putting in a lockbox, Alan Greenspan, that same guy, got in front of the Senate Finance Committee, I think it was, and said, I'm worried about the surplus. I'm worried that if we have a surplus, we'll spend it. And we're just going to increase government spending, so what we should do is tax cuts. Promoting George Bush's tax cuts, which basically caused 30% of this massive deficit debt that we have now. And they want to steal that money from Social Security permanently. All right, folks. We're getting closer to hard launch day. What will be the difference? I don't know. I'll send out an email blast. We'll have our systems down, right?
Maybe a banner in the background.
A what?
A banner in the background.
Maybe a banner. We should get a banner, maybe. I think by then we'll have a Ustream. We'll have some type of Sammy Cam solution.
Hopefully we'll have the phone system ironed out.
And we'll have the quasi-phone system ironed out.
And video games.
Yeah, yeah.
Video games may come like after a week after hard launch.
Okay.
All right, so I will say goodbye, and then I will take your IMs after the show in the post-show. We could use branding suggestions for the post-show, too.
Yeah.
Okay, so play some outro music, and then I'll get my IM up. My IMO, which I forgot to launch at the beginning of the show, which I had meant to do before. My IM is Majority FM. Majority FM. Back. You can IM me at Majority FM, Sam Cedar Show, Cedar MVS, all of those. I will be on Dylan Radigan's show today, which I probably should have mentioned before, but I forgot. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? Neffer, good morning, Sam. You hit... You being hit on last night. You know I adore you and think you're scrumptious, but you're a married man, so I just don't do that. Okay, well, I appreciate that. No, I wasn't suggesting that more people should... John Stewart and his meeting with Tim Geithner, Stewart's brother being on the New York Federal Reserve Board. I didn't know that, but I'm not... Well, I don't know. That's interesting. I mean, you know, that... That may be of, you know, what forms John's worldview. Morella, I'll be disappointed if hard launch means we're not going to have any technical difficulties, Sam.
Yeah, that, no danger of that.
Right. That, I'm sorry. That will not happen. Svengalis, hey, last night I had a soft launch problem. Any advice? You really need an economics consultant to help out. MERS is a mortgage electronic registration systems, which I said. Correct? However, it's not a single company, but rather an electronic database maintained because local, county, not state holders of the right require actual paperwork and notification in the process of securitization. The fast-paced movement of these securities require quick transfers of titles and deeds for the readers. MERS, which exists in a nebulous field, did not process any paperwork at the local county level. This was done to ensure quicker movement of the mortgages. Another example of how companies like Countrywide and others lent out crappy contracts, sold them off as quickly as possible. MERS is an issue now because the legality and process of foreclosures, right? While most foreclosures are likely legal and proper, enough have been improper to raise questions, right? Must of course clear the market so that lenders are more certain that borrowers are not likely to bail on the loans. Wait a second. Foreclosures must occur as quickly as possible to clear the market so that lenders are more certain that the borrowers are not likely. Okay, so that, yes. That was actually a topic 2000 paper, which won Economics Nobel. Stiglitz was one of the recipients. Ah, I know that. If you actually read this all, I owe you a dollar. Okay, I will mark that down. Svengali, when he signs up for a subscription.
It's a dollar more.
Dollar more. Yes, and I'm going to take another dollar because I know what Stiglitz's paper was on asymmetrical information in the marketplace. What do you think about that? That's more or less what I said. I was wrong about the state. It's local, county, hold the titles. But I was rushing through that because I didn't want to go through that long of a dry. But yes, Svengali, thank you. I appreciate it. I thought I said that. And I understand why you have soft launch problems with your program. Maybe you should be doing a little less economics reading.
a little more paying attention to your lady. Ebert may not Kevin semicolon may not be in the game, but he did write the best line of film dialogue ever. You will drink the black sperm of my vengeance. Yeah, he wrote for
Valley of the Dolls.
Face? Valley of the Dolls, right?
Yeah, Corman, right?
Right. Post show. Cat food on. Are you talking to me? I don't get. Oh, a branding name. Are you talking to me? Are you talking to me? Let's not worry about taping this part.
Okay.
Hey, Sam. Kenny Mac. Why does it seem whenever you or Sank, i.e. the smart liberals, are on, the best they can do is Bill Scheer's bromance buddy, Matt Lewis? Is it really a debate with someone who can't say three words without quoting Erickson? I mean, I don't know who they're going to bring on. You know who's very, very smart, conservative? It's that Rehan guy. But I debated him in the green room once at CNN recently. The Parker Spitzer trial runs. All I kept saying was that Paul Ryan has agreed to raise taxes up to 16.9% of GDP, which comes from that, I think it was a Cato Institute, the Cato Institute did a study that showed that if you lower taxes below 16.9% of GDP, or I can't remember the exact number, that it actually increases government spending because people think they're getting a break on it. It's like, you buy more if it's on sale. But people don't realize that we're paying for it, just not right away. And but my response to that was, why doesn't he just start there? Because he won't say that, because politically the Republicans can't admit that taxes are necessary. Smitty, Sam, my system worked better today. I was able to get the entire program. Keep up the good work. Oh, glad, Smitty. Wow. Pluger, I want a John Benjamin. Okay, this we got to write a note. This is a great idea, Pluger. I want a John Benjamin voiceover for The Launch is Hardening. I'm going to send a note to myself to remind me of that. After show should be called Majority Retort.
I like that.
Happy now. Stuart brings the news from the funny, and the Rachel brings the funny from the news. Great show today. Thank you. Thank you. You can IM me at Cedar MBS or Majority FM. I need a list to remind myself of what I need to do beforehand. One of those things is launch my IM at the beginning of the show so that people know that I'm on.
Can do.
Launch IM at beginning of show. This is the way we do it around here, folks. Yeah, we and I'm happy now. I listen on my phone while traveling to Reno to Minden. Perfect. We had five people listening on their phone today, according to the stats that were provided me during the show, but I'm happy now. How do you do that? I couldn't figure out how to do it on my phone, and I have an iPhone. Ugh. Nothing worse than there we go. I'm happy now. How do you do it? Open Safari, right? That's the way I did. I open Safari on my phone. Okay. All right, I'll take a couple more IMs. Click the Listen Live image on Majority FM. I thought I did that. Okay. Neffer, play sound. Well, Wiggles. I'm not sure Stuart's okay. Svengali. Color. Oh, I'm an economist. We do nothing but dry. Okay, I hate to do this and get another IM, but the Cato Institute is a libertarian think tank, and they quite frankly don't understand the Laffer curve. We don't fall on the right of the curve. We fall on the left. Lowering taxes anymore will only decrease revenue, not raise it.
I will not stop IMing this crap. No, actually, I appreciate it. But I will say this, that the Cato Institute, it was, God, what was the name of that guy? It was the former head, I believe it was the Cato Institute, from 2006 or 2005. If you say the name, I'll remember it. And he did do a study that showed if you drop taxes below 16 or 17% of GDP, spending goes up. It's not a revenue argument. I appreciate that. But yes, I understand. They don't understand the Laffer curve. We don't fall on the right of the curve. We fall on the left of it. Yes, that what you just said there, I don't know what that means. I've heard of the Laffer curve. But I thought it was that thing that, you know, the further you drop off the side of a mountain, the more you get like, oh, I guess that's Doppler effect. We should make a little instructional video how to listen to the show on your iPhone.
Yeah, since we figured it out.
We could actually make a pretty funny video. Actually, like, I'm surprised. Kevin Semen, colon, Netflix streaming has every episode of Doc Martin. If you haven't seen it, it's a British Northern exposure. It's far better than not terrible. Okay, Doc Martin. Maybe we should wait for Chris Rosen to earn his keep.
You also have another recommendation for Netflix off of Twitter from Kay DeCody.
Yeah?
The Roy Orbison Black and White Night, I guess, is on there. And I've seen that. That's good.
Is that a live show?
Yeah, it's a live, like, cinematic type of show.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it's got Springsteen.
Not interested.
Elvis Costello.
Does not do it for me.
Bonnie Raitt?
Bingo! Sold!
There we go.
I gotta get back to being able to.
Sam, the buttons are marked, right?
They are marked, yes. Hey, Sam, why does it seem whenever you are. Okay, hit download on the page. What? Kenny Mac 4? I don't know what that means. Sam, I said. Okay. You could also call the after show the Minority Support. Okay. I'm happy now. From Safari, click on the link. I have iPhone 4. Interesting. Wait, what's playing in the background? Do you hear something?
Yeah.
That's gone. What was that from?
Oh. That's from Dorsey's mic.
Dorsey, are you playing? Oh, you're playing.
Oh, you can pick that up.
I could hear me. That was weird. Svengali. Okay. It's a bell curve. There's a point on the curve where taxation produces the maximum amount of revenue. T. The idea is 100% of taxation equals zero revenue and zero taxation equals zero revenue. The idea is 100% taxation equals zero revenue and zero taxation equals zero revenue. So there's a middle ground. The problem is the Republicans have become so brainwashed by the idea that cut taxes more revenue that any tax cut to them means more revenue. They've taken a sound principle and made it perverted. For Republicans, any tax cut. Okay. I see what you're saying. There is a point, in other words, where taxation becomes so burdensome on society that it actually begins to undercut society's capacity to create revenue in the form of taxation. And that revenue diminishes because economic activity diminishes because of the burden that taxes place on them.
It's a good Wikipedia article on the Laffer curve, actually. Looking at that.
All right. Well, I'm going to trust that it's right, that Wikipedia thing. But all right, so I understand. It's a bell curve. So where's the point? Where is that point, Svengali? Where is that point? We may have to cut up this section as a separate podcast because some people may not want to listen to it.
That's fair. Yeah, we could do that.
If people are, let us know, people, because you know we have a 1 hour, first hour podcast,
mm-hmm.
and a. But you know this section may end up even being sequestered altogether.
Yeah, we'll figure it out.
Right. Wait! Don't do that.
Wait, don't worry. We're not doing anything yet, Kyle. Netflix TV shows, Wings. Wait, don't do that. Netflix, the TV show, Wings. What? Are you suggesting I watch the TV show Wings on Netflix? Or have you now said, wait, don't do that?
Wings was one of those shows where if I saw the intro...
No one knows, says Svengali. What do you mean no one knows?
What, the optimal point on the Laffer curve?
Why don't you just look at your freaking bell curve? No one knows.
I don't think that's how math works.
Ridiculous. You guys seriously need to get a Netflix sponsorship if you're going to keep pumping Instant Watch. It's true.
We're probably going to need better reviews than Not Terrible for that, though.
That's probably true, too. It's probably going to take more than like, yeah, what do you want? It's not good.
Yeah, you get what you pay for.
Postal Service spokeswoman has asked Congress to allow it to scale back to five-day delivery. How do you feel about that? No, I wouldn't like it. That would be bad.
Are they still talking about cutting delivery on Saturday?
That's what they're talking about, I imagine. I guess you could pick it up at the post office if you want.
Okay.
Russ Belville does it that way. One official recorded hour followed by an anything goes second hour. Normal radio. Hi, Sam. Sorry I missed most of the day. However, Stewart removing political stance from shows like Paul Simon removing politics from a South African music album during apartheid. Being civil for the sake of civility rather than taking a stance on the issues at time is naive and stupid. Also, your mic was very distorted during the call in, as was caller.
Yeah, we're working on that.
Why would my mic be distorted?
I think it has to do with the fact that the input for the Skype feed is also coming off the board. So, don't worry, I'm on it.
Between you and Svengali, I haven't understood a single thing that we've been talking about. Wow. Kyle is putting just a ton of things on my plate. He thinks I should now direct a movie for Netflix. I used to have a very good connection at Netflix. And I don't hear from him anymore. What are you going to do? All right, folks. I think that's it for today. We will see you on Monday. Our hard launch is on Tuesday. I really honestly don't know that there's anything that would be special. You would know anything different, but hopefully we'll have our shit together by then. Feel free to email me at samcedarshow@gmail.com. Oh, Crystal Count has showed up. All right, that's the one thing I want to talk. Stewart bends backwards to give extreme benefit to the doubt to Riley Bush fight. And Crystal, right, starting point is, hey, these people are mean, but are misguided. Meanwhile, Jeremy Scahill, Howard Dean, Rachel Maddow are treated slightly ridiculous and asked, hey, aren't you going too far? Ben Mankiewicz exists the same personality type, and I don't quite get it. Why do liberals have to explain themselves when they get loud or harsh in their critiques? It's like the conservatives are just babies we need to coddle first and then reason with them. I agree with you. I think it's to a certain extent because these people identify at themselves as liberals on some level. And to do so, to identify yourself as a liberal is to also believe in some measure of self-doubt, by almost definitionally speaking. And so when you have another liberal on, you feel more obligated to be more doubting and skeptical of what they're saying. I think that's what it is. You know, how is it that someone like me has escaped that? I think it's probably a pathology. I don't recognize the humanity of other people I'm talking to. I see them only as things. And so I'm not worried in that way. I don't believe that they... No, I mean, I think part of the reason why I got into this is, like, I was sick of watching liberals taking a knife to a gunfight. Crystal Count, I have a question for you. Please email me at samcedarshow@gmail.com. How do I get on Stitchers?
How do I get on Stitcher? Can you get me on there? Email me at gmail.com. All right, folks. See you later. Didn't you tell me that you got Marin on Stitcher or Sticker or whatever that was? Okay, thanks. Send it to me. All right, folks. See you Monday.
The left just got a little bit louder on The Majority Report.